the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Well, you know, we got a lot to talk about when Plum and I, during our one-minute break there between TV and radio, are actually discussing this topic thoughtfully. How about that? So, yeah.
Instead of sarcastically?
Well, you know, I mean, you would think that while we're not on the show that we would have other stuff to talk about. No, we're talking about bonds and interest rates. This is what we do, and we're doing it on the program. Cranking out the money advice, yeah, we do this day in and day out right here. No matter whether we're on the program or not, it's time to get things going again. It's another edition of Bucket Strategy Investing. I'm Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum back in studio with me, talking money strategies with you. And as I sort of said here, we're going to start things off with a discussion on bonds and what you might want to think about if you really believe that the bond market could be in trouble. And you know, I've been hearing this for the last few years. If you think it could be in trouble. Now, that would mean that you believe that interest rates will rise to the so-called normal levels. I guess they're still normal. I don't know. Now, how do you protect yourself against interest rate risk? Is there a way to do that? Are there alternatives to bonds? Should you be holding your bonds? Should you be selling your bonds? Am I talking about timing? Well, not necessarily, but at the same time, you got to be prepared. So we're going to talk about that with Professor Plum. And you, of course, coming up in just a couple of moments. Now, if you've got anything on your mind that can be on bonds or any money topic that's important to you right now, you give us a call, 877-PLANNER. Money issues solved here as best we can. We'll answer them right here on the program, 877-752-6637. Do have lines open right now. You can also email us at our website. You go to the website, wealthed.com. Find the link that says find your answer. That's near the upper part of the page, and we will take it from there, as in we will answer your questions. Professor Rick Plum back with me, as usual, from Lucia Capital Group. Rick is part of our nationwide team that we call the Brain Trust, and he's here to answer your questions. And I would ask you to keep in mind, too, that if you want to talk to any Bucket Strategy advisor about your portfolio, you give the folks at Lucia Capital Group a call at their off-air number, 800-644-1150. They've sponsored this hour of the show, and we appreciate that. You should take advantage of the advice and the experience of the Brain Trust, all right? Your Bucket Strategy should be tailored to meet your unique goals. The number again, at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number, and if you want to talk on the air, 877-PLANNER. I would encourage you to call that right now with whatever money question you have, 877-752-6637. Been hearing a long time about this, Professor Plum. When interest rates hit the, I think it was 2011 or 12, maybe it was 2012, when the 10-year hit, 1.6, something like that. I don't remember exactly how low it went, but it got pretty low.
I think it was more recent than that, but yeah, it got down to 1.6, 1.5 range maybe. It's been pretty low in the last, I mean, it's still very, very low.
Yeah, it is. Now, when we first started this whole zero interest rate policy or heard about it, it was, you know, things were wacky. It was 2008, 2009, and, you know, things were looking bad and bailouts and bank failures and this and that. So the fact that there was a zero interest rate policy really didn't startle people all that much. The fact, though, that we're here,
and we've been here
6, 7, whatever it is, years later, 8 now almost, and we're still, I mean, up in arms over a 25 basis point raise. The first one that they did last December. The fact that we're still right around 0% for the overnight rate, and that the 10-year is still around 1.9 currently, is baffling to me. Now, people are thinking, as they have for many years, interest rates have to go back up, you would think. Okay, let's make that assumption right now. Bonds, you're holding your bonds. First of all, the relationship between bonds and market interest rates.
Well, there's an inverse relationship. I mean, so when interest rates in the market go up, the value of a bond that you're holding goes down. How much it goes down depends on how long it is between now and maturity. If I've got a bond that matures in, you know, 6 months, it's not much of a movement because the interest rate doesn't affect much because I'm not giving up my opportunity cost for very long, 6 months. If my bond doesn't mature for 25 years, well, I'm giving up that interest rate for a long period of time. That has a very large movement in the cash flow or cash value of that particular bond. But we got to go back to the reasoning of why do we even talk about bonds? Why do you even want bonds? There's two reasons. to have, or there have been two reasons, to have bonds in your portfolio. When I talk about bonds, I'm talking about bond ETFs, bond funds, bond individual bonds, you know, and I'm just talking about them in a general nature so we can get more specific as we go, because they have different risks depending upon the type, length, and style of bond that you're buying. But for why do people buy bonds in their portfolio in the first place? Well, historically, it was for income. You know, back in the day, you could get a 5-6% interest payment. So you put $100,000 in, you could get a $5,000 a year, $6,000 a year. Back when John was talking about the Treasury in 1982 at 14%, $100,000 got you $14,000 of income a year, every year for 30 years. That was a pretty interesting time horizon. So you could use the bond for a cash flow and actually receive a cash flow.
Boy.
Now, not so much. The other reason to have bonds is to create a moderating factor to the overall portfolio. It used to be more so than now that bonds acted differently than stocks. Just because the stocks were going down didn't mean bonds were going down. Just because stocks were going up didn't mean bonds were going up, and vice versa. They had a little bit of a discorrelation. Unfortunately, lately, we haven't seen that discorrelation as much. In fact, we've seen interest rates, you know, when they're going down, the bond is going up, the stock market's going up, and vice versa. So they tend to act from a value standpoint in a very similar fashion to the stock market and other areas. So we've lost some of that moderating effect that the adding a bond component to the overall portfolio created in at least historical terms. Now, one thing adding a bond portfolio still does, although to a lesser extent, is create a cash flow within your portfolio that can be used to reinvest into the volatility. So if stocks are going down quite a bit, even though the bond value may be going down, the interest should be the same, because if I have a bond that's paying me interest, unless that bond goes out of business, that interest continues to come in. And I can use that interest that's being created to buy more stocks, buy more bonds inside my portfolio. So it still has somewhat of that moderating factor, but when interest rates are as low as they are, the income is obviously lower, which means there's not as much buying in. You're not getting as much of a benefit from that internal dollar cost averaging, so to speak, as we used to get when the average bond was paying 4%, 5%, 6%. Now the average bond is paying 2-3%, half of what you used to get. And so it doesn't have the same quite issue. So why do people still use bonds in their portfolio? Same reasons. At least that's what they think they're getting. They use bonds for income, but it takes a lot more, a much larger allocation to that bond portfolio to get the same income. Or people are going out significantly longer on their maturities in hopes of getting that yield. Now, this actually worked from a total return standpoint over the past 6 months because bonds went down again. You know, everybody was worried that when interest rates went up, when the Fed raised the super short-term interest rate last December, that interest rate, that signaled the interest rate increase beginning, the beginning of the increasing interest rate.
Yeah, which would mean that it reverberated all throughout.
Every type of bond was now going to go up.
Exactly.
And what really happened was the exact opposite. The longer the bond, the more it actually came down. 10-year Treasury, kind of a bellwether, you know, a barometer of what's going on, was about 2.3% when they raised the interest rates. Now, the Fed doesn't control the 10-year rate. The Fed only controls a very short-term rate. And so people just expected when the interest rates on the short-term side went up, interest rates across the board would go up. But it didn't. It leveled them out almost. It flattened them down quite a bit to where the 10-year Treasury went from 2.3 down to about 1.8. Now it's back to just shy of 2%, but still a lot lower than what I was before. How much money do you really have to invest to get a decent size income off of that interest rate that they're paying? It just takes a lot. So they're just a difficult animal to use for income creation. And we've talked a little bit about how they don't have the same moderating effect. A couple days ago, John was reading a trivia statement, a statistic that said the old 60-40 mix between stocks and bonds had a certain risk-return relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And now people have moved, or the managers have moved to more to an 80-20 mix, 80% stocks and 20% bonds, to create a similar risk profile. well, wait a minute, how could we have a similar risk profile if we reduce the exposure to bonds and increase the exposure to stocks? Because stocks are much more risky, correct? Not necessarily. The risk that you're facing in a bond portfolio right now may be more, at least more from, definitely more on a risk return relationship than what you're potentially able to get out of a stock portfolio. So that 60-40 mix, the 60-40 mix of old and the 80-20 mix of today has a more of a relationship of the same risk return profile.
Yeah, so
it doesn't mean it's risk free, by the way. I'm not saying that. It is risky. That's what I'm saying. It is much more risky to play in the bond market today than it was years ago.
Yeah, okay. So now you might be thinking, and we're going to answer this question or attempt to answer it after the break when we come back. What are some alternatives to bonds? Perhaps there's something else that can provide, mitigate somewhat the risk that bonds used to provide that, given current interest rates, don't do so. So we'll talk about that. Anything else that's on your mind? We got lines open right now. 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group talking more about your money when we come back. Bucket Strategy Investing, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Don't forget, we've got a couple of events still to come, and these are all Saturday events, and really you should join the Brain Trust, because we talk a lot about this stuff on our shows, but we don't have a chance to really get in-depth as you would in a face-to-face meeting with one of the Brain Trust members. And you can do so at the workshops, still continuing. That's right. The spring schedule continues. The Lucia Capital Group 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. Next one coming up this Saturday. You folks in Portland, get ready. Brain Trust is coming through. Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, and the local advisors there in Portland, Tigard, and the whole surrounding area. This Saturday, March 19th, join the Brain Trust in person. Get your money questions answered and learn all about retirement income strategies. A lot of stuff to go over, and I'm sure you'll get as much knowledge as they intend to, for you to get out of it. So this Saturday, Portland. Saturday, April 9th, couple weeks away, Houston, Texas. And then April 30th in Santa Clara, California. Those are the next three. There may be more after that if you check wealthed.com. Find out where they're going to be. You can sign up. It's all free, wealthed.com. If you don't happen to see the city where you're watching or listening to us, let us know. Tell us you'd like us to show up, and we will consider it. In fact, we've done that before. Hey, come on out, wherever you happen to be. So just let us know, wealthed.com. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Now, before the break, we were talking about some of the interesting dilemmas people face, Professor Plum, when holding bonds. Used to be that as stocks went up, bonds maybe did, you know, a little bit on the other side. As stocks went down, you could sometimes count on bonds to
recovering a little.
Recover, and you had some sort of mitigating factor. One side of the seesaw is up, the other was down.
And even if they went together, you had the income, at least back in the day, you had a fairly high income that you could reinvest and buy some more.
Right, that you could make up for. Well, now we have no inflation. They can't seem to figure out how to create inflation, which seems to me is very easy to do. But anyway, you have no inflation. Interest rates are still down. And people are starting to wonder, well, what's going to happen? If interest rates go up, I may have some problem with my bonds. So
a lot of people have actually gone into long-term bonds in hopes of getting some interest rate because they keep hearing that, well, these 0% interest is going to be here for a long time, which it may be. I'm not saying it's not going to be. And if that happens, you've got a decent income. But if interest rates go up, you have a shock to your system when you see your statement every month and you see things potentially going down and down and down. So what do? Do you go out and buy a 10-year treasury that it pays you 2%? I think it's 1.9, 1.95 today, give or take. Yeah, call it 2%. What can you do? So you're locked in for 10 years. Now, if you truly, truly want to make a bet that interest rates aren't going to move for the next 10 years, that's okay then, if you're willing to take 2%. But if you're going to take 2%, you might as well back off the time horizon and maybe go to something that's guaranteed by an insurance company that pays 1.8, 1.9% for 3 years, maybe 2.5% or thereabouts for 5 years. Why buy a 2-year, 10-year product when you could get a 2.4, 2.5%, five-year product?
You mean why buy a 2%, something at 2% for 10 years
when you can have 2.4, 2.5 for 5 years?
Or even 2% for 3 years.
and well, just shy of 2%. But what the reasoning you would do the 10-year one is because you truly believe that interest rates are going to stay down for the next 10 years and may even go lower. Now, if that happens, the idea of bonds, when you're buying bonds, when interest rates are very high, you want to buy the long-term maturities. When interest rates are very low, you typically want to buy the short-term maturities. Because then when interest rates start moving back up, your bond matures and you can buy another one at a higher rate. Your bond matures, you can buy another one at a higher rate. You're not locked into that lower number for the length of the very long period of time. But like I said, back in the 80s, if we were looking forward, we would say, this 14% Treasury bill cannot continue this way. Well, let me see. That Treasury bill will continue this way, but interest rates won't continue this way. I should be buying into big-time, long-term bonds as much as I can back in 1980, 81, 82.
And it would have been a good move.
Oh, you would have made nothing but money over the next 25, 30 years. Of course, you would have had a rude awakening when those bonds came due and you had to buy some new bonds at 2%. But yeah, so you went from making $14,000 a year on your $100,000 investment to $2,000 a year on your $100,000 investment. But hey, times change, right?
All right, so how does something like, you mentioned what, fixed annuities or fixed indexed annuities, how can these act as, I don't want to call it a bond replacement because I'm not sure that that's what it is.
Well, and it goes back to why are you buying these particular issues in the first place? Right now, there is nothing that really creates income without touching the principal the way bonds used to do. Bonds don't even do it. So if you're looking for an income-producing asset, you have to change your mindset. You have to go into things like real estate, which is illiquid, business development companies, which are typically on the illiquid side to get away from the volatility, things that are less liquid. So to get a reasonable rate of return, like we used to potentially get out of bonds, we have to change the way we're investing. But if we're looking to buy bonds or something of that quality as a placeholder, as a moderating factor in the overall portfolio. Again, the other reason people would buy bonds in a portfolio. You can get similar income results with less risk by mixing it up with fixed annuities. Now, the biggest thing that people say, he's talking annuities again, and annuities are horrible. Doesn't he know that annuities are horrible? Annuities are tools, they can work. Now, do I not know that annuities have fees? That's the biggest gripe about annuities too. Annuities have fees. Well, variable annuities definitely have fees. Fixed annuities that you don't load up with junk riders don't have fees. There are no fees on a fixed annuity. If I've got a fixed annuity, if this insurance company A is issuing a fixed annuity that says I have a 5-year surrender period, a 5-year interest rate lock at 2.4%, you are going to get 2.4% for 5 years. No higher, no lower. And there is no cut on your, you know, if you put in $100,000, your 2.5% is earning it on $100,000. Where you have a problem is if you try to take the money out within the 5-year period of time. Because the insurance company, the only way they can make money is to have it, and they're taking the illiquidity risk. They're locking up earning more money. So if you want your money back in the first 5 years or whatever the surrender period is, there's probably a what they call a contingent deferred sales charge, a substantial penalty for early withdrawal. And you've heard that talked about with CDs. Insurance companies charge a little bit higher, a lot higher.
So you got to keep it there for that designated period of time, but at least during the surrender period.
But unlike a CD, you can get to most of them, you allow you to get to about 10% of the money each year, 10% of
without any
penalty.
Yeah.
So a fixed annuity for somebody who has the time. It doesn't create a lot of income. You could take the interest from it every year, just like you were taking it from your bond portfolio. You could get that 1.92%, 2.4% interest paid to you every year, just like you could out of a bond portfolio. Or you can leave it alone to compound. It's a little bit easier to leave it alone and compound because it is actually growing and being added to the principal every year. But you can do it either way. I mean, and so you go back to the question, would I rather invest in a 1.9% treasury or a 1.9% 3-year fixed annuity guarantee? At the end of 3 years, I can walk away, no surrender charge. Now, if you really think interest rates are going to stay down, well, I still don't think that there's a difference there. The only reason you would not want the 3-year contract is because you think interest rates are going to go down. And you don't want to renew 3 years from now at a lower rate.
No, if interest rates do go down, the bonds that you hold that you buy now are actually going to be worth a little bit more.
Fat chance. I mean, hey, I don't know.
What, of interest rates going down?
I guess they could go down, but probably not much from here.
No, you wouldn't think so. Although we used to say, back in the day, All right, 877-PLANNER. We got other stuff to talk about. 877-PLANNER. Evaluating some of the risks of bonds. We can get into that. Anything else that's on your mind, you give us a call. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, talking to you about your money. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Got a little bit of room on the phones. In fact, actually, looks like we've got five lines open right now. So give us a call, 877-752-6637. Whatever money issue you might have, you can talk to us about it right here on the program. Maybe you've got some bonds. You're not sure what to do with them. Maybe you got some annuities. You're not sure if they're right for you. Whatever it is, you got a Social Security strategy, you need help with that, we can talk to you about that here on the program. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. We will take a couple of calls here, Professor Plum, but afterwards, sometime before the top of the hour, I do want to talk to you about bonds. How do you know if it's a good time to I mean, you know,
well, I like the idea when people come in and say, but my bonds are still paying 6% and 7%. And you say, well, the interest you're receiving is 6% or 7%, but the value is like 130% of what it's worth. So you're really only,
right.
And you're going to lose that 30% that you can sell right now over the next 5 years that you have remaining on the bond.
Or, yeah.
I'm making those numbers up, but it's not a true 7% on the current value.
No, it's not. It has to do with yield to maturity, which actually I think is the true value of a bond is what you get when you look at something called the yield to maturity. We won't get too far into that, but you do need to know how these things work. Is this a good time? Well, we'll talk about that in just a little while. Okay, let's take some more calls. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. I said we got five lines open right now, so grab them while you can. We'll put Flory up next in Dallas, Texas. Hi, Flory.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm good.
Good. What's up?
I have a question. I have two 401ks and one IRA. The one IRA is from Ameritrade. The other one is from Fidelity at Retirement 2020, and also Transamerica 2020. And I'm losing. My money is not growing with that, and also losing a lot of money. Like every quarterly, it's about $2,000 that I've been losing. So on all of those, that I have. Now, they told me that it's good to invest it to AmeriVest, you know, which is fixed income, and it's all bonds. The Ameritrade was the one, counselor said that it's better to go that way because it's conservative, but it will only earn about 3 to 4%. And then there's another guy that he said that fixed annuity is better, that, you know, to invest, but that's the only money I want to protect because I'm already 58 years old. I need to retire, by then.
Okay.
I don't want to lose any more money because I have $300 before and it just keeps losing. I put them on a, interest, and then I completely forgot it because they were the one managing it. And they said that Ameritrade, I choose one that they don't have to manage. So I can understand that. They said that I have to choose one of that.
Well, before you talk about the investments, you really should have a strategy of why you're investing in the first place, so you know whether you should be doing it and how to manage it. It sounds like you're being fairly aggressive. You've got stocks, and even the 2020 funds right now have a 40-50% allocation to stocks. And so they are going to, when the market does what the market is currently doing, they're going to go down. Now, they don't go down as much as the market did. The market went down much more than probably those 2020 funds. But the idea is the first step back. I am not a big fan of the bond funds right now, depending upon the type of bond fund. There's many different types of bond funds. It's like saying, is this stock fund equal to that stock fund? Well, I don't know what kind of stock fund it is. I don't know what kind of a bond fund it was. So is a fixed annuity potentially correct? Well, maybe, depending upon what you're trying to achieve from it. You said you wanted to retire in a year. Is that right?
I'm 58 right now. I was seeing 66 and a half, whatever,
Okay, so 6 or 7 years.
Huh?
So about 7 years.
7 years.
Uh-huh. Okay. Then you can use things like a fixed annuity, a fixed index annuity, a structured note annuity, all of which do not have fees. You can use actually a direct stock market investment, whether it's stocks or mutual funds or ETFs, for some of the money, because even though you're going to retire at 65, 66, you're not going to spend 100% of the money in the next 3 or 4 or 5 years. Some of it you're not going to spend until you're 75, 85. So some of the money can be in the more volatile areas like you're in now. Some of the monies you should have in more safe, secure areas. And I was talking about it earlier. If I can get 2 or 3% in a bond fund and I can get that has risk, and I can get 2.5% or 3.4% in a fixed or fixed index annuity without any risk to principal, why would I want to take the risk? They are appropriate for short to intermediate term time horizons. They're not appropriate for long-term time horizons. But you have an intermediate term time horizon. So the idea would be to take a look at the portfolio. How much do you need to start drawing from the portfolio when you ultimately retire? How much you're adding to the portfolio on an ongoing basis? You should be adding the new money to your new 401k to the more aggressive side of the house so that you take advantage of down markets like we've seen over the last 6 months and have a strategy going forward. Yes, I think fixed annuities work better than bonds in what you're trying to accomplish. And now we just have to work within the confines of what your current 401k offers for the longer term side of it. But I think you can correct what's happening and manage it a little bit more efficiently.
Okay, so it's better to go on fixed annuity for now.
For some of it, but not for all of it.
Some of it.
Yeah, for some of it, staying in a stock market investment. In fact, maybe even moving some of it to a 2030, 2040, 2050 fund makes some sense.
For what?
For the long-term portion of it. But you need a strategy. You need to know why you're investing. Instead of just jumping from an investment that sounds horrible or has lost money to another investment that may sound good, find out why you're investing in it. Identify the need for the money. If it's money I need to spend 5 years from now and I want it to be safe and I'm willing to earn 2 or 3%, I should be looking for a product that does that. If I'm not going to spend the money for 20 years, I can afford the risk. I need to put X amount of dollars into something that has the potential for getting a much better rate of return than 2 or 3%, but it will have risk. Identify a purpose for the money. Find an investment that fits that purpose, and it's not going to be one investment. It's not move the entire thing to a fixed account. Move the entire thing to a target date fund. Move the entire thing to a growth account. It is identifying the time horizons, filling the appropriate time horizons with the appropriate investment, and going to the next one and going on.
Okay.
And if you need help, we can refer somebody to help you.
Yeah, hang on a second, Flory. It sounds like you may need some a strategy, and I think you probably do. So hold on a second. Don't go away. I think she can benefit really from,
Well, it helps so much to have a strategy that tells you what you should be looking for.
Yes, because otherwise you're kind of playing whack-a-mole here and trying to find what looks good and hit the...
I don't like losing money, so what are my alternatives? Well, your alternatives are a lot of different things, but do they fit what you're trying to accomplish? A 3% bond fund, that's the yield that they're talking about right now, but many of those bond funds have actually earned zero or maybe even a slight negative over the past year because of the way interest rates have moved. So the 3% in interest that I received was unfortunately taken away by the 3% or 4% loss in the net asset value that I had. So I started with 100 and the interest was reinvested, and at the end of the year I still have 100, but it paid me 3% every year, I mean that entire year.
Yeah, so somebody say, well, how is that possible?
Because the initial investment lost down was only worth 97,000. And so my 100 is a combination of the 97,000 left over of the initial investment and the 3,000 that I added to it from the interest. And it could go the other way too. The net asset value could go up if interest rates go down.
Well, and that's the other thing, and you honestly don't know. Now, her concern, of course, is that she was losing money in the stock market. I mean, it seemed to be going down quite a bit, so I don't know that her diversification was necessarily where it should have been. But, I mean, you know, to say, well, maybe you need to be more aggressive with a portion of your money to somebody like that. I mean,
but it's all a matter of she needs to be more conservative with a portion of her money, the portion of the money that she's going to spend from year 7, 8, 9 to year 10, 12, 15. That needs to be more conservative.
Yes.
The money she doesn't need to spend until she's 75 years old, that actually can be more aggressive. And it could lose a little money or it could make some money in the short run. But over time, it tends to have a much better opportunity to do better than inflation. Well, we don't even have much inflation right now.
No,
to
but
do
you better never know.
To get back towards, not necessarily all the way back, but back towards historical norms.
So when we talk about this, you're sort of saying match your assets to your liabilities.
I am saying that.
The short-term money should be in some sort of safe short-term accounts. And the farther out you go, if you don't need it for 10 years, you can put a little bit more risk into that. If you don't need the chunk of the money for 20 years, you can be a little bit more aggressive with that.
And this is where I do not like target date funds.
Yes.
It's 2016. That 2020 fund should be relatively stable. It should not have big swings in value.
Right.
But a 2020 fund, on average, probably is still 35, 40% stocks. That has some swings in value.
Boy, it does. Okay, hang on. Danny in Houston, I want to get to your question on RMDs, because that's another big topic that we're going to cover here. So I'll let you ask that question. Just hang on a couple of moments. Please don't go away. That's a direct order from me. We're going to talk to you about that and anything else that's on your mind. We'll give you enough time to ask your question, and we will answer for you when we come back. We just have two lines open right now, so get them while you can. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking more of your calls when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, lightning in a bottle, right here. That's right. Catch us every day at this time. In fact, not only are we finishing up this hour, but there's another hour still to come. So stick around for that if you can. In most cities across the country, we'll be talking to you about your money. In fact, next hour, I'm going to try, if we can, to get into this once again. We're getting a ton of questions on this. On this new Social Security laws, or the lack of file and suspend, there's still a whole bunch of questions.
And what you do and do not have to do
exactly
by a certain deadline.
That's it. So anyway, stick around for that. We're going to talk about that next hour. For many people, in fact, if not most, the deadline's already gone. But hey, it helps to know about this, and it helps to understand how it works. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Let's move along. Danny in Houston's been hanging on a long time. Danny, hey, thanks for calling. How you doing today?
Okay, I'm fine.
Good. What's up?
I have a question. I was reading this article, ARP, on RMDs. I'm currently 69 this year. Will be 69 near the end of the year. And so in 2017, I'll be 70. And then in 2018, I'll be 70 and a half. My question concerns the RMD. ARP was saying right now the factor is 27.4, whatever I have in my IRA.
Well, yours won't be, but yours will be 26.5, but that's okay.
Yeah. But my question concerns, within the IRA, the traditional IRA, I have a variable annuity from Voya.
Okay.
And it's in my IRA.
That's fine.
My question concerns, do I have to take two separate RMDs, or is it one on the balance of the IRA?
It's one based on the balance of your IRA, or it's two or three or 10 or 12.
Yeah.
They don't care what accounts the RMD for the IRA comes out of. They don't care how many distributions it takes to get to the RMD. They just care that between January 1 and normally December 31st of that year, that you take out enough money from whatever sources of IRAs you want to take them out of to satisfy the total required minimum distribution.
So in other words, you could take them all out of one. If you've got multiple IRAs, you could take a tenth out of
one.
You know, 10 of them. Whatever.
Yeah, if I have 10 IRAs, all of different values, but they total up to $1 million.
Uh-huh.
My required minimum distribution is close to $40,000. Let's just say $40,000 for ease of math.
Correct.
It doesn't matter whether I start taking $1,000 a month out every month, and then in December I take an additional $28,000 out to satisfy the $48,000. Whether I take it all from one account, whether I take $1,000 from this account, $1,000 from that account, take $1,000 from a different account every month, and then start back over at the.
Right.
Doesn't matter where it comes from.
It's just the total of your IRAs.
Yeah.
Okay. So. How do I mean? If I, you know, I go to the banker, the investment broker, and says, "Okay, well, I want to take out X amount of money this year, say $40,000." Do I have to fill out or sign some paperwork that's my RMD, or how is the IRS notified?
Well, the IRS knows all about you. Big Brother is watching. And you may not notice it, but every year, just after tax time, a form goes out. The IRA custodian sends a form to the IRS.
Oh.
And because they sent information to the IRS, you get a copy of it too. It's a 5498. And what that form does is it tells the IRS how much money is in their IRA, how much money was received, transferred, moved in, moved out. It's not a 1099. That's a different issue.
Yeah, no.
This is just
the 5498.
The 5498 is an informational return or informational form only, but it lets the IRS know what you got.
Okay. Is there a separate 1099 at the end of the year that tells me so much is RMD and so much is it?
Nope.
Just
the IRA custodian, you know, however many IRAs you have,
yeah, just one,
just issues a 1099 that says, you know, Danny took $67,327 out of his IRA in calendar year X. Now, if that's enough, or they don't care whether it's enough to satisfy your required minimum distribution or not. The IRA custodian.
Yeah.
They're just reporting what happened.
Okay.
Now, many times when you turn 70, they're going to send you a letter saying, not always, but many times, they're going to send you a letter saying, hey, you're old enough now, you have a required minimum distribution. Do you want us just to do the calculation and automatically send it to you? And we'll just pull it pro rata from every one of your accounts. And you can just sign up to have it done automatically. Or you can have it a little bit more controlled and say, no, I want to take more or less out, and I want to control where it comes from. Either I want to take it from cash to be able to spend it, or I want to move securities over to my personal account because I don't want to spend it and I don't want to spend the securities. So there's lots of things that you can do. But the IRA custodian is not required to guarantee that your required minimum distribution is made.
Okay. Well, the reason I ask about the separate or identify is because I was audited in 2013 by the IRS because I made within this traditional an IRA. I told you I had that Voya variable annuity.
Uh-huh.
I am eligible for distributions from the annuity, and I transferred the annuity from the annuity to my cash account within the IRA.
Yeah,
and the IRS says no, that's cash, that's taxable, and so I had to prove to them that it went from one account within the IRA to the other one because Voya issued a 1099.
Right. Voya, that's an accounting issue.
Yeah.
Where Voya is actually acting as its own IRA custodian.
Correct.
It may be showing up on your brokerage statement, but Voya is still a separate entity from your IRA. And
correct.
So what Voya said was, hey, he took money out of this.
That's all they know.
Because money left them, they issued a 1099.
Okay, well, that was my other concern, because I figured, do I have to take two separate IRAs, you know?
No, but you can. I mean, you bought the Voya for a reason. Why did you buy the insurance? Why did you buy the annuity?
Life insurance, just that for long term, and then it was variable, and it was going up to 7% a year, and then at one point I stopped and I started just taking distributions from it.
Okay, so you're taking distributions from the lifetime income guarantee.
Correct.
Which you should be doing because you're paying for that. You might as well take advantage of it.
Yeah.
So that distribution, hopefully you're having it set that it's coming directly to your bank account, right?
Now it's coming. Oh, yeah, since 2014 it's been coming to my bank account.
So you get a 1099 that shows X amount of dollars every year is coming out. So that will start to satisfy, if not fully satisfy, your required minimum distribution. Of course, when you get
to, I had to take two RMDs.
Yeah, it may mean that you have to take a little bit more from the other IRA because this distribution may not satisfy the entire IRA RMD.
Yeah. Hey, listen, Danny, I got to take a break here. But if you want to hang on for like 60 seconds, we can come right back to you on the off-air side of this at the top of the hour if you have some more questions. So hang on if you need to. It'll just be a very quick minute or so. If you need the brain trust off the air, you can talk to Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group at their off-air number. Coincidentally, 800-644-1150. Another hour of Bucket Strategy Investing is just ahead.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented,
Montana, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.